Does anybody have any comments on the April minutes? So I'll make a motion to approve the April minutes.
Second that motion.
All in favor? Colleen Thompson, aye.
Yosemite's aye. Co-
Cookie, aye.
Matt Cochran, aye.
Okay, so we'll go ahead and move on into our Lee Nellis discussion of built development standards for RV park, campground, and guest ranches. Thank you, Lee, and you're on.
Thank you. Okay. I sent out a few days ago a new draft of the campground standards, attempting to reflect as best I could the conversation that we had a month ago. And I raised a handful, a teeny handful of questions in the memo that, that covered those. They're really not so much questions about those campground standards per se as about questions that those standards raise. And I want to, before we finish this up, I want to think about the idea of landscaping in terms of xeriscapes, where we don't have irrigation water and it is much more difficult to create really effective buffering and screening for land uses. And I think that applies to commercial developments beyond campgrounds. It's just that this is where it came up in looking at the material the town had previously. And that goes on to the landscape standards in general. I think the standards that we have in the commercial development standards are pretty good, but if there's something specific about the landscaping of campgrounds other than making the buffer bigger, which I've already done, we ought to talk about that. I recalled our conversation saying that we weren't going to require illumination in campgrounds. And obviously if it's provided by the developer, it has to meet the standard. Likewise, we're not requiring a recreation or play space. And then one change I made is that there was a fairly vague reference to the idea of storage in campgrounds. And I assume people assumed that they were talking about storing RVs, but that's not what it said. And upon reflection, I think that storage, whether it's of RVs or boats or anything, is a separate commercial use that's adequately covered by the standards we've got now. And we don't need to mix it in with talking about campgrounds. If somebody wants to have a storage area adjacent to their campground, then they get a CUP for that. And we either, you know, you guys either approve or deny it based on whether it complies. And then one final picky point, you know, a lot of campgrounds these days, particularly KOAs, but a lot of others are beginning to imitate the camper cabin. Do we want to permit that form of camping too, or if they have those, do we treat them as a motel? I don't know. It seems to me that I think we actually have adequate standards for dealing with them. But in terms of a definition, we might get somebody who says, hey, I want to have camper cabins as part of my campground. And the way we've written things up to this point doesn't really answer that question. So, and you all in reading through what I sent out may have questions of your own. Make sure I'd like to work through that. And then Josie sent out a reminder that the land use table committee had a definition of guest ranch that's different than the one that's in the existing zoning. And I the more I think about guest ranches, the more I think they raise another bigger question about Boulder that we need to talk about too. And then the final thing I want to say, and we don't need to return to this, is that I did send out a very brief memo saying, hey, that I finally looked at all that material that Peg has been sending to all of you about changes that the legislature made. And those changes are super extensive, and they're going to affect quite a few things in Boulder's ordinances. We can work on, if we're going to be moving from this on into talking about residential uses, we can work on part of what the legislature changed there. But there's a bunch of other things, particularly dealing with subdivisions, that the town, even though not all of them will ever happen in Boulder, the town probably ought to try to comply with. And I guess at some point the Planning Commission and Council need to say, hey, are we going to ask Lee to make those changes, or are we going to get them done some other way? So I don't know that we need to return to that right now, but the Planning Commission and the Council may need to talk about getting that done. So that's kind of an overview of what we ought to do tonight. And I think we could just start by taking any thoughts or comments that any of you have about what I sent you on campgrounds, either the text of what I sent you or the questions that I asked, and go on from there.
I wanted to talk a little bit about xeriscaping, because I think it is a consideration that we need to talk about xeriscaping, especially since we have water shortages out here. What I was wondering is if there is a definition of xeriscaping.
Well, what there really is more like a handbook than a definition, because there are many different ways that you can approach it. And if you want to look for information on xeriscaping in a somewhat but not completely different environment, Park City actually has a manual on xeriscaping that a lot of people use as an example. And you could go to Park City's website and take a look at that. I just want to be sure that we don't write this up assuming that people have irrigation water without saying, hey, we might get commercial developments that don't have access to irrigation water. And what do we expect there? Do we need to bump up or make our standards a little more specific? That may be.
So I've used xeriscaping in Moab, Escalante, and here in Boulder. Mm-hmm. And you can get a really beautiful landscape from, xeriscaping in my mind is a low water vegetation species, and right. You can get tree species that grow to 25, 30 feet that are xeric. Right. And then you have your bush species, your ground covers, and everything in between. So, I'm all for xeriscaping and say, I see no issue if we wanted to add additional language that, would include it. In my mind, it would automatically be included in as landscaping, mm-hmm. and vegetative mm-hmm. color cover anyway, but right. not opposed to adding more information if others would like to do that.
Well, I guess my thought, and you know more about it than I do, my thought is just to not have that option be a mystery. And maybe people have seen enough examples now as it becomes more popular that it isn't. But normally, I think when you talk to the general public about landscaping, what they think about is pretty green and pretty dense. And I just think we need to make sure that if xeriscaping would satisfy the standards, which I agree that it certainly can, I think we need to be clear with people that, it's not all going to look like the Boulder Mountain Lodge where you've got plenty of irrigation water. It might look a lot more like the actual dry landscape surrounding Boulder with the pinyons and junipers and things like that. So I don't know, maybe this is really more, I think it's more a matter of information than regulation.
Yeah.
Does anybody else have any comments? I like the xeriscaping too, because out here we're not, especially in the desert, I see a lot of these campgrounds that don't have lots of grass. They're just using the natural ground.
Right.
And as long as there's no fire hazards or leaves and brush and all of that left on the ground, that xeriscaping is is something that we should kind of push, really, so that there would be less water usage.
Okay.
It could be something as simple as water wise or Zurich landscaping is acceptable, and you know, plug that into whatever our standard says.
Right. Yeah. That's kind of what I'm thinking too, is that we just need to make sure that everybody understands the way we are defining landscaping includes that.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree with that. That seems simple and reasonable.
Okay. I will add something. Anything else?
What does everybody think about camping cabins? Do we want to get into that?
Well, here's a question for Lee. Recently, the idea of having enough rooms in relationship to the population, so we get our resort tax, is an issue in Boulder. Do RVs account for something like that? Do you have any idea?
I don't know the Utah law on the resort tax well enough to tell you off the top of my head. I'm assuming, I know the Wyoming law that an RV space pays the lodging and meals tax, as they call it in Wyoming. And I'm going to guess that that's true in Utah, but I can get the answer to that question pretty easily and, you know, send around a memo saying, hey, here it is.
If it wasn't the case, I'd suggest camping cabins go under the motel thing. So that actually feeds that.
Steve, do you know that? Do you know anything about camping cabins qualifying for that?
I know RV spots qualify as long as they have sewer, water, and power. They have to have all three to qualify.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And that's what we have required.
And that's built into this.
Yeah, so if those are going to count for the tax, then the camping cabins just about have to.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And so, but I think the question is, it's not actually a question about standards as much as it is about procedures and definitions. If we want to allow camping cabins that do not have independent, sanitary facilities, like those KOA standard cabins that are really just bunks and a teeny little table. If that's okay, then I think we just need to make sure that the definition reflects that it's okay.
So I just want to add, I've had a member of the public talk to me about camping cabins as part of an RV campground park, and had some good points of, you know, cabins being, you know, maybe more aesthetic than RVs in a campground type setting, and maybe the preference to have cabins and tent sites versus RV pads. I think that was a good point, because some of those campgrounds with cabins can be pretty attractive. And I think there is interest in our community to, you know, once we make this, well, it's already available, but I guess once we finalize this, that cabins would be an option.
Okay. Then I think I just need to work on the definition a little bit so that we are clear about that.
Yeah. Okay. I'm okay with that.
And I agree with storage should be out. That's a different use.
Yeah.
But one thing I didn't see in the write-up was a limit to, you know, we've got the 10 units. So that's either 10 pads, 10 tents, 10 cabins, or any combination of per acre, right?
Right.
But we didn't put a limit on, like, okay, so somebody comes forward with 10 acres. Does that mean they're going to get 100 units? That's way beyond Boulder's capacity.
Right. And so we need to, I guess I have a question about that. And I'm, as usual, it's a bigger question than just about campgrounds. do we need, and this is more challenging than not, but it's a good idea. Do we need to just say, look, there's, do we need the plan, starting with the plan and then going on to the zoning language? Do we need to just be more clear about the limitations on Boulder's ability to accommodate things?
Yes.
Whether it's a big campground or not. I mean, it's implicit in there, in the plan, and all of you have read the language in there at one time or another, I imagine, that, and it's mostly phrased as it probably logically should be in terms of impact on services. But I'm beginning, and once we get into talking about residential, this is actually going to be even more important than it is talking about campgrounds. I'm beginning to think that we need something that is more definitive about the limitations.
I agree. There's a carrying capacity, and we haven't quite identified what that is. But
you know, the plan talks about it. So there's a starting point in the plan. It's not like we're making up something entirely new. Not that we couldn't, but we can build on what the plan already says. But I'm kind of at the point of saying maybe we need to have another conversation. And I'm not trying to deflect the point about we need a limit on the size of campgrounds. I think it's okay to talk about that separately. But it's going to come right back up again as soon as we talk about residential development, right? How many more homes can actually happen in Boulder? You know, somebody told me that there's only enough water for maybe 80. I don't know how accurate that is. But there is a limit, right? Whether it's 80 or what it is. And I know that you guys are getting short on EMTs, or at least that's what I had heard. I wonder if we need to add up all those considerations in terms of response time and all, and make a more definitive statement in the plan about the town's ability to absorb things. And that would take some help from local people, and saying, okay, here's what we know, here's what we've got, here's what we don't have. I obviously don't know how to answer those questions, but I'm thinking that, can Boulder soak up a 25 unit campground, a 30 unit campground, and then of course you get into the issue, okay, can you soak up three with 10, and is that different than one with 30? But I don't know. To work it back to the campgrounds, do you have a number in mind for a total size or number?
You know, I don't. I was just going to throw out there, you know, we have this 10 per acre, and I would say a maximum of 20. And that's just a guess in kind of taking a ratio of size of the town versus what another 20, you know, units would be on a seasonally. And I think in this discussion, you know, you mentioned water. And I think water hookups will play into it. It's just, where does that play into along the course of the timeline? And is it going to be too late? But I think the important thing is septic tanks, because we do have a lot of our water on well systems, and you start loading these septic tanks on, we've got, you know, a huge sanitation issue. So in that discussion, we need to have that in there as well. So there's, I guess, 2 points there. I was thinking 20 is a maximum, just to answer the first question, and then.
I'll agree with that too.
Cookie used that number too a couple of last month or whatever we were talking about. The max would be 20, no matter what the size of the property.
I still think that's true. But you know, to what Lee is talking about, I think that's a great idea to define the limits of where we are now in as far as servicing our own residents, our own people here in Boulder. And the water issues are bad. We've even had something this year that Randy sent out that said, please don't start watering your gardens yet if you're on city water. So that kind of caught my ear. I don't know what that was about. I haven't seen any emails to say it's okay to start. But yeah, there are definite restrictions. And I think unless we really define what some of those restrictions are, we're going to have to just go over and over this time after time, different developments and subdivisions and whatever.
And one more thought along those lines, when we start talking capacity, we need to look at what our road systems are. And we've got a problem in Lower Boulder with a narrow road and a lot of growth happening. So there's another point.
Yeah, no, the roads, I mean, we've already talked about the roads probably more than any of these other limitations. As we talked about Lower Boulder Road, and it's not the only one that probably has to be thought about as imposing some limitation. But I don't think tonight's the night to get deeper into that very much. But I do think that once we switch out of saying, okay, we have a draft of the campground thing that we feel okay about and go more into the residential uses, we're going to come right back to this carrying capacity issue. And so I think we've got to deal with it. And, you know, the septic tanks are, the relationship between septic tanks and wells is a biggie. And there's a relationship between septic tanks and surface water. You know, there's also the potential that septic tanks can affect Boulder Creek, as well as wells, depending upon the gradients and the geology. And I think that we might have to seek some more information on that. Let's throw in a 20 unit max on campgrounds for the time being, so that we've addressed the capacity thing and move on and see, you know, if you guys are okay with what I wrote up on everything else. I feel like what I've got here is relatively straightforward and relatively clear, but obviously it's clear to me, and the important thing is that it's clear to you. So
I would like to just ask about point 22.B6, which is the solid waste disposal. Can we go there?
We can go there.
I've gone to yet another two or three RV parks. And they said, well, especially this was true in Wayne County where they have a lot of wind, but they said unless your garbage containers are within a fenced in area, you end up having garbage blown all over the place if it's just a dumpster. That was one point. Another one was, I guess it refers to F. It was on that. I feel like I'm just grinding away on this one point, but
right.
It's the on-site dwelling unit. I just think an all over look at it makes me think it's an opportunity to have a place for a person who works in the RV park to live. And I feel pretty strongly about that, but you know, I'm just one person on that.
What do you think about 22B7A?
Resident in park, let's see. I was reading from my notes.
What every is campground it, shall have an attendant or host on site or available within a 10-minute drive.
Yeah, the 10-minute drive, I would, in my hopes, I would get rid of that 10-minute drive and just say, you know, there should be an attending host on site, just like there are in parks,
right?
Like state parks. And I don't know. I just think it would be a lot better to do that. I don't know how everyone else feels.
I actually agree with Cookie on that. It's certainly a it stops any trouble from starting.
I'm not opposed to it.
Okay. Well, it's very easy for me to put a period after on site and take away the 10-minute drive.
Yeah, thank you for that.
So we can do that. I think you're going to maybe have some comeback from the community of saying, well, I live just down the road and I have this other parcel of land that I'd like to use. And you'll have to just go through that conversation with people if it comes up. But, you know, the purpose of a draft is to raise the questions. And this makes a clear statement of what I think you guys really want, which is there should be somebody on site. So I will, I'll fix that. And then going back to the waste disposal thing, I think that you can end up, I think that if you concentrate the dumpsters all in one place and fence them off, that then you end up with kind of an area that you're really going to have to buffer. You're really going to have to pay some attention to. Probably my favorite campground in the world has a dumpster every 300 or 400 feet. And so nobody has to walk too far, which makes it easy for people to do the right thing. And, you know, and they just leave the dumpsters out and they're not obtrusive because there's just one, you know, blue steel dumpster in this case. If you fence an area and stuff, then I think you also have to say that it has to be landscaped or buffered in some way.
Well, what they showed me was kind of a cyclone fence with boards or some brown plastic thing, maybe, I don't know, that were kind of shoved through the holes. And right. It looked plastic. Like, it just looked like a wooden fence around it. I'm not cemented to this idea, but that's just what they said.
Right.
And they said it meant for a neater, cleaner campground. If you have a wind thing going on.
Well, I think that perhaps we can say that they have to be, in addition to being animal proof, they have to be windproof. And you guys can then decide what that means when you look at it a case at a time. Because I think there might be different ways to solve that problem. But the type of enclosure that you're describing certainly would work. So maybe we just need to bump up the amount of detail in that.
Well, I think it was Donna that just commented too, was if we have dumpsters like that, the county truck has to be able to have access because they're the ones who dump them.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you have to have it be, the way I wrote this is that you guys can require that there's a solid waste contract. If you want to put that as one of the conditions of the CUP, there's not going to be a contract if trucks can't get to them.
This is not the first time that this, has been thought of. I mean, it's not like we have to reinvent the wheel. There's all kinds of enclosures all over the place. It's just whether or not we want to require them or not. The trucks get in and out very easily. Of this one, there are two gates that swing together, And one is kind of more of a man gate. The other one opens up and the truck goes in and lifts it and dumps it. And anyway, blah, blah, blah.
But the important thing is that we make sure that you guys can look at it when it's proposed and make sure that you think it works. Right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. I will add something there and I will take away the 10 minutes. Anything else?
I think that was it for me.
I think it was it for me too.
I'm good.
Okay. Well, let's spend a minute on guest ranches then. And it's interesting because Josie sent me, a definition that you all had looked at that is much more complete than the definition that's in the zoning ordinance right now. In the zoning ordinance right now, there's not really any definitional difference between guest ranch and a motel. There would be with the definition that you guys had thought about. And so I want to skip ahead from the guest ranch to talk about the whole idea of agriculture in Boulder for just one second and to plant a question with you that I think we're going to have to come back to again when we talk about residential development. The definition that you guys have been looking at assumes that a guest ranch is an accessory use to an existing agricultural operation.
Right.
So my first question about that is, since it's still a commercial use, the way our standards are written right now, it would have to have direct access to Utah 12. Does having it be an accessory use to an existing ag operation change that?
Well, it's going to limit the existing ranches, how many would fall into that category.
Right. I mean, I don't have any serious, anything to quibble about the definition that you have. Some of it is definition and some of it is standards, but we can put it apart and put it in the right place. And it has a number of units limited and so on. And like I said, I don't have any big questions about what you guys had come up with, if that's what you want to use. But I have these bigger picture questions, which is, okay, I'm not sure that every ranch qualifies as being able to provide direct access to Utah 12. We can define guest ranches differently so that they don't have to have direct access to Utah 12. That's not, from the point of view of writing the ordinance, that's not an issue. But I think you need to ask yourself, if you want to treat guest ranches differently on that particular standard. It's kind of like the master standard for commercial development in Boulder now is that you have to have direct access to the highway. Our guest ranch is going to be an exception to that.
And I think that's going to come back with what the push is going to be from the community. I mean, I can speak for myself. I prefer that commercial activities stay, limited to Highway 12, but I know that there's going to be, a lot of pushback on that for this guest ranch definition.
Okay.
Because it does give this economic opportunity to, this agriculture sector to bring in an additional income.
Mm-hmm.
Do I like the extra traffic down in the ranch areas? Not particularly, but I do understand the economic need. So it's a hard question. And I don't think we're going to be able to answer it in one night.
Well, no, I guess what I want to do is put into what we have as a draft, whatever you guys feel most comfortable with. And then we'll see what the community says. If what you feel most comfortable with is that it has to have direct access to Utah 12, then let's leave it that way for now. Let people push back if they're going to, which we don't really know for sure. And see what, see what it looks like in the discussion. But I don't think you don't have to yield up a principle that you think is important yet. If you think we want to have the commercial activity concentrated where it's got that access, then let's leave it that way for now.
Yeah, okay. I like that. Scope it and see, you know, what we get.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Any argument with that?
No.
No.
So I will take and revise just slightly the definition that Josie distributed, and I'll, you know, part of it will go in the definition section to replace what's in the existing ordinance, which is not a useful definition really anyway. And part of it will get taken up into standards. But it will all be the same stuff that's there. And I think I don't think there's much more we need to say. I guess that if a guest ranch brings livestock into close proximity to homes and such, you might want to have some standard about dust, flies, odor, things like that. Certainly isn't necessary for that to happen given how much space there is in Boulder, but I suppose it could. And then I think that's the only thing that occurred to me above and beyond what was there. So if there's no additional thoughts, I will just get that worked into the standards the way that we have them, and I think we could proceed.
Sounds good. Great.
Thank you. Okay.
So I will work on the campground things in light of this conversation and the guest ranch thing in light of this conversation. And I'm thinking that we can be pretty much done with a draft that we would take to the public in one more meeting, which is a happy place to be.
Yeah.
And I want to plant this question with you. I've been thinking about how to tackle residential, and I think we all agreed in our first initial conversation that there needs to be a community meeting in which we talk about workforce housing. We talk about, you know, where is the plan says we're going to try to make it possible for people to live here. Are we serious about that? Are we willing to do what it takes? And I think that has to be a relatively open community conversation that's facilitated so that it doesn't get out of hand before we write very much down about that. But as I look at beyond that really important question to the reality of what's in the zoning ordinance as stands now, we have a lower density residential zoning district and the GMU zoning district that are no longer hardly different. And there are different ways to come out of that conclusion with a question. But my question is, I think the best question is, does Boulder need a separate agricultural zoning district in which we would deal with proposals for residential differently than in a lower density residential district? And I am particularly thinking here about the irrigated lands, which are limited, which are pretty much irreplaceable. You can't really run the water up on top of a mesa and say, oh, we'll have a new agricultural area up there. And I'm wondering, you know, if we want to make a stronger distinction than now exists. You know, the plan kind of tries to talk about protecting agricultural lands, but the way the zoning has evolved, there's not a lot of difference in how they're dealt with anymore. Do we want to say, hey, there needs to be an agricultural area if we're going to hold on to the character of this community, and residential development there is going to have to be more limited, or we lose the character that we are seeking. And I know that could be a very contentious conversation. And maybe there are ways to address it. But we have a couple of minutes before you guys need to move on to your next business. And I guess that I would like to hear any initial thoughts people have of how we come back around this and You know, our 5-acre lot's good everywhere, which is pretty much what we've got now. Or do we go back into an agricultural area where less residential is permitted? I'm not saying a particular density or number. I wouldn't want to pick a number at this moment. I'm just saying, do we need to make a much more clear distinction in favor of trying to hold on to particularly those irrigated lands?
In my mind, I think it's a worthy conversation to have. I'm not saying it's an easy conversation to have, but I think it's a worthy one to have. And especially because it, as you've noted, I mean, it fits right into the intent that's in the general plan.
Josie, you've talked about it too.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Lee, I'm glad you brought that up, because we have we have tried to approach this topic before, and it didn't go anywhere. But I think we should have the conversation.
Okay. So we're going to run into one of those interesting things about planning for small places that have a lot of resources, which is we don't have an infrastructure that would make it easy to concentrate development in one place, i.e. there's no sewer system. And I'm not sure that Boulder River needs a central sewer system. I think that would be, honestly, a big blow to the character of the community. But we have these capacity limitations that we talked about a few minutes ago that bump up against things in terms of focusing and concentrating development. And we know, I think, from recent history that there are some people in the community who are not very enthused about, you know, concentrating development in one place to save open space in another space. And I think you said it, you both said it, it's a tough conversation. But I think it would be worth trying to have the conversation again, because I mean, the desire that I hear from all of you is to preserve a certain type of character. And I just think about the view of Boulder when you drive in, from whichever angle you drive in, basically, although coming from Escalante maybe is the most dramatic, is it's just this bright green spot out there. And if you subdivide the irrigated lands, you're going to lose that.
True.
Maybe people are going to be such that you do end up losing it, unless you can afford to buy conservation easements on a lot of land. But I think we've got a bunch of related questions here. We've got the carrying capacity question, we have the affordable housing question, and we have the irrigated lands question, is the way that I think about it in my mind. I have these three pieces, right? And you can't take them apart and still have Boulder look anything like Boulder looks right now. The carrying capacity thing is going to give you an ability to say we'll have overall less development. But if the overall less development, let's say that you ended up saying, hey, we only have the capacity for 50 more homes, just to pull a number completely out of the air. If those 50 homes are on 5-acre lots, that's very different than if those, and particularly if they're on 5-acre lots that go out onto the irrigated soils. That's very different than having 50 homes in a smaller space. I mean, you're talking about 250 acres, which is, it's not huge, but it's a pretty big chunk of Boulder. I don't know. I'm thinking that we can't go a whole lot farther without sitting down with people and saying, okay, we need to think about Boulder's character into the future. I mean, I don't know what you guys are seeing with your real estate market and demand, but every other resort community, including the one that I live in, is just going crazy. In Saranac Lake, there are no longer any homes listed for sale. There are some homes for sale, but nobody has to list them anymore. The realtors all have a list of people who've called and said, get me the first house you can get me.
I think considering those the fast changes, it's a crucial question and an honest discussion that needs to happen in this town. And I think, you know, at our best, we can work it out, but we're all going to have to work together to come to face that reality, actually.
Okay. So, well, let's go one more meeting and finish up the guest ranch and campground thing, okay, in June. And we don't have to take it to the council right away or take it to hearing right away if you don't want to, or you can. It's up to you. And then in June, let's say we're going to spend, because you guys have got to move on to your other business. Let's say we're going to spend the June meeting laying out a lot more exactly how we think you need to approach the community with these big questions. Okay?
That sounds good.
Thank you, Lee.
Thank you.
All righty. Well, I'm going to leave you guys to your other business. You guys have any thoughts about when you're going to go back to meeting in person?
I would assume it's going to be happening here. The town council had a hybrid meeting where we're doing both Zoom, and I would like to do that at least next month, or have an open meeting. Things are looking pretty good. I think here in Boulder,
Right.
Okay. Does anybody have an answer for that? Is anybody interested in going back next month? How do you feel about that? Matt? Josie?
I'll be staying on Zoom.
Okay.
I think I'd be on Zoom for a little bit longer as well. I'm not opposed to trying the hybrid, but I would like to hold off on going full back to the, you know, the one open meeting option for now.
So then let me ask you a question, because I expected people to say that maybe they would like to stay on Zoom. Let's think about whether the community conversation we're talking about on these big issues can actually happen on Zoom, or whether you need to find, you know, out a couple of months, however long, need to find a time when people can actually get together in person. I guess
even in August,
my intuition tells me that it's the type of meeting that would not work very well on Zoom.
Yeah,
but, I think you're right.
So,
you know, even by August, things could change.
Yeah, August or September. Well, let's just talk about that in June and try to lay out a pathway towards that conversation. And in the meantime, I'll write up what we talked about tonight and get it off to you.
All right. Thank you.
You bet. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks.
Night.
Good night. Okay, so we actually have about 6 minutes before it's only about 5 to 8 right now. Or are we ready to go ahead and move into the public hearing?
Colleen, go ahead.
Yes.
Pete or Tina had their hand raised, and we should probably do initial public comments while you have a chance.
Okay, we could do that.
So, Tina, do you want to say something? You were muted, so.
Oh, okay. So I just wanted to let everybody know that I think that Lee's comments were really good about the 5-acre lots. And I really think that possibly a more incentive, a better incentive for people to consider cluster development if they're going to buy large areas that of agricultural land would be an option that the Planning Commission should suggest to the Town Council.
Thanks. Thank you. Okay, so I don't think we have, does anyone have any other comments? Can we go ahead and move on to, do we have to wait till right at 8 o'clock?
Well, I think officially, probably since I advertised it as being 8 o'clock, probably so, but we could start with okay. just some introductory comments or kind of getting the lay of the land, so to speak. I think you can start that. Or if people had questions, you know what you did before, if people have questions they want to pose before
yeah,
you
have okay.
a public hearing.
Okay, so we could do that. Okay, so at 8 o'clock, we're going to open up a public hearing for the Ray Nelson preliminary app for subdivision. So before we open up the actual public hearing, does anyone have any questions? Once we get into the public hearing, Ray and the public can make statements. But for right now, if anyone has any questions about the preliminary application, go ahead and raise your hand.
I'm not seeing hands raised right now. Oh, Colleen, just as an aside, Marion's on the call. So when it comes time for you to do a vote, she'll be voting.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. I didn't see her in here, but that's okay.
It says,
thank you for letting me know that. Yeah, thank you.
I still don't see any hands raised or questions. Is there anyone who wanted to just speak out or unmute yourself and say something? Nope. I think we're close enough to 8 o'clock, Colleen. Go ahead.
Okay. Okay, so we're going to, I'll make a motion to open the public hearing on Ray's preliminary app for subdivision. Do I have a second?
I'll second that.
All in favor? Aye, Colleen.
Aye, Josie Muse.
Aye, Cookie Shouse. Oh, I already did it. That's okay.
Is Matt there?
I don't see Matt anymore.
So do we need Marion to vote?
Aye, Marion Johnson.
Thank you.
Where did Matt go?
I'm not sure.
He must have fallen off.
Okay, so Ms. Shayla, are you going to introduce this for us or give us, could you start this out with us for us as far as the application?
I can, or if Ray is more comfortable doing it, either way.
Yeah, either. I'm fine with either.
Do you want to talk? Go ahead, Ray.
I can go through it if that's what you'd like. My approach would be we could go either of two ways. There are only three items that were incomplete from the last meeting. We can discuss those three items, or I can start from the front and go through the whole thing. That's kind of up to what you guys want to hear.
Has everybody looked at the application? I've really seen all the information that Ray submitted?
Yes.
I have.
I have.
Okay. And so I guess that, let me find my paper here.
Michela, do you consider it complete?
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. I think the only thing, and Ray already knows this, the fire hydrant is missing from the plat. And so I think other than that, it looks great. I think it's ready to move forward with a vote.
Great.
I looked through it too, and I don't really have any questions or any comments on it. I felt like it was complete.
So I just have one question, and it's in regards to our fire marshal Peter Benson's letter. I think we're going to see this coming up a lot, and I'm just not sure how we deal with this, and if we're going to need some legal language from, you know, attorneys when we do move forward with something that he's requested. And it says that, you know, on this particular subdivision, Race at this time has no intention, or has assured him that he has no intention of subdividing again. But he wants the planning commission and town council to require some guarantee that if either of the lots ever gets subdivided again, that the calculation of whether some required infrastructure is feasible includes this subdivision. So what I believe he's saying is if, you know, and this could be in the future, this could be 10, 20 years and there's new owners and they want to subdivide again. If they had to bring that infrastructure in, then it needs to also include this lot. Would have to be included in that. And I'm not sure how we write that up, and I'm not sure how, you know, that gets carried forward.
Are you, Josie, are you looking at the one for Ray's, or are you looking at the one for Deer Ranch?
This is the one I'm looking at for Ray's. Pete says
it's page 37. It's page 37 if you want to bring that up, Peg.
Okay.
I thought, yeah, I noticed it was on both of them.
And I thought it was on both applications. And I guess on this one, as I understand, you know, that infrastructure is already on this lot. So right. I'm not really sure how that would carry forward. The other subdivision, it makes more sense to me because the infrastructure is not there. And his recommendation right now is not to bring it in because it's only one lot. So that's my question is how do we bring that language in? How do we assure that it's legal, and where does it go?
If I can comment on that,
you bet.
The new what I call a new lot, it's the lot to the 9 acre lot. That is currently just barely over 9 acres. By your current ordinances, that cannot be further subdivided. I made those boundaries such so that I personally don't want it subdivided. I want it to stay the nine and a half acres is approximately what it is, because I don't want a development there. I want a house and maybe a business on the highway if that, you know, because they're going to be my neighbors. So that's one of the reasons I put that less than 10 acres. You just have to hold them to the ordinance and don't change your ordinance.
Yeah.
But on the rest of the comments, down the road, somebody may want to, you know, it's not going to be me, but if I ever sell this place, somebody down the road might want to split this up. And if there's a further subdivision of either one of those properties, they have to go through the same routine I did, which has to require all the infrastructures. So I personally don't see any value to that paragraph.
You know, and I agree with you. It's on your particular subdivision, because like you said, that front lot already has all the access off of Highway 12 to the required infrastructure, and it's under 10 acres. So I'm inclined to say not to pull this language in, unless somebody else, or Pete's on, if he wants to explain it further.
The idea behind that was basically I think Ray has designed it so that that front lot is not going to be subdivided further, and I, you know, that's fine. This thing would apply to the rest of it, which is about 20 acres if I remember right, and it's just seems to me as these things happen and people break off one lot and they say, well, I don't intend to develop, we should make sure that we remember that they're breaking off one lot, and so it's not possible for someone to go, oh, I'm breaking off one lot and then another lot and then another lot and bypass all the infrastructure requirements by saying, oh, well, it's just one lot. It's not feasible.
Ah, I see. Okay.
Yeah.
If I can comment on that, Pete, I understand what you're saying, but I think your ordinances already cover that, because like I say, I don't have any intention to it, but if we sell this and the next buyer wants to subdivide, you've already got rules that it can be subdivided into 5-acre lots. And if it's subdivided into 5-acre lots, whether it's one at a time or all at one time, the infrastructure has to go in at that time.
Yeah.
That's true, but counting the lot that you're just breaking off is, I think, an important part of just remembering that, you know, it, taking that into account in for a future. And I'm not sure how exactly to do that. And I don't know if it's a giant pain to do that, then maybe that's.
Well, I guess my question is first of all, a deed restriction is not the way to do it. Second of all, I think you've already got the ordinance in place, as I've stated, that will require that anyway.
Yeah, I disagree. The ordinance would cover all the new lots, right? If you subdivided your 20 acres and you broke off another 5 acres and you broke off another 5 acres, then there would be no calculation there to say, oh, you need to have infrastructure for the next 5 acres.
I think if I can interject really quickly, I think in agreement with Pete, but I also think that a deed restriction is perhaps not the best option for a way to do this. Curtis and I talked extensively about this a few days ago, and we talked about either a plat note or a development agreement to be put in place. This was with regards to the next subdivision we're going to talk about, but I think maybe versus a deed restriction, those two options might be better ideas. And I don't know, maybe if you guys want to talk about that, what Josie, your input would be valuable.
Yeah, I think it really takes a lawyer to figure out what the right path is. And I don't really know. I mentioned deed restrictions just because I knew about that. So
yeah, absolutely.
That's not the only way to do it, I'm sure. So,
I mean, if you're concerned,
I don't have
a problem in signing a piece of paper that says I will not further subdivide. I don't have a problem with that, but I'm not going to tie up the piece of property for any other future buyer.
So I haven't been able, I've been trying to pull up the ordinance because, as I recall, you know, we have these requirements for subdivisions of, is it three lots or more? I want to say it's three lots or more. Then you have to bring in, you know, these infrastructure requirements. And if it's only subdividing into two lots, then we have the, ability as the planning commission to waive those. And don't quote me exactly on that language, but it's something along those lines. So I'm getting what Pete's saying is that if a future owner was like, well, I'm only dividing it into two, therefore I don't have to worry about the infrastructure. And what Pete's saying is, well, it's already been divided once, so that would no longer be, they couldn't use that as an opportunity. So where can we document it? Can we just document it on the application as part of the approval? If, you know, use the tax ID numbers on this piece of land and say if it's divided again, then it falls into this higher standard of infrastructure. I don't know. Do we run that by an attorney to see if that's how we want to deal with that?
And also, does it go on the plat map? Is that a place too? I remember didn't we do that with Daniel Kennedy? He inserted in things on his plat maps, I think. So yeah, that's an option too.
I just wanted to just raise that question so that it doesn't get forgotten. Whatever method works, I think is you know, whatever works for all the parties involved is a great idea. But
so a question to Ms. Shayla. So when a subdivision application comes into you, do you do a history check on that piece of land?
That's a good question, Josie. I'm still learning all of that. So I'm writing down, probably we need to email and have a conversation with our town attorney about the best way to handle this. And then I need to talk with Curtis further about, do we run a history? And I mean, because there's so few, yeah, that would probably be in our memory. We would know, but yeah, there probably needs to be a procedure in place for researching those and identifying that on anything going forward, right?
Yeah, I think some type of standard operating procedure such as that would solve this. And it would be a simple solution. It would just be documentation in the town records and it would come up with a check.
Okay.
I don't have a problem with that because I understand that if you're going to do some more subdividing, you need the infrastructure. I have no intention of doing that. And I don't mind however you want to put it on the plat or wherever else you want to do it. My objection is it's not a deed restriction.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Does anyone have any, we're in a public hearing, but it was all of us talking. Did anyone in the public have anything to say yet? I don't think, it doesn't seem like it.
Carla Quinta.
Go ahead.
Thank you. I this isn't against Ray or any specific person, but we see applicants in San Diego all the time and they make all kinds of promises they don't follow through with. So my suggestion is not about applicants, but you have to have a way to track this. And that's why I question deed restrictions. I don't know the best path forward, but as long as there's continuity and Michelle's the ordinance person and you guys are on the planning commission, somebody's going to remember, but that's not always going to be the case. And so it's the tracking thing. And Michelle had the right idea, I think, about contacting the attorney.
I don't see anyone else. I did want to mention, I got a email from Dave Conine, who is one of the nearby landowners, who couldn't be on the call tonight, but simply said that he was totally in favor of Ray doing what he wants to do.
It looks like Don Ah just asked if, is there a well or
that's
water?
That's Donna Owen.
Oh, okay.
That's Donna Owen. Yes, there is.
Okay. Just wasn't sure who saw it.
Right?
It's a water right that will be transferred to the new buyer that allows him to drill a well. If that answers the question. That's in the package.
Yeah, I saw that, yeah. Anybody else have any questions or any comments? So let's go ahead and close. I'll make a motion to close the public hearing and we'll go into our regular meeting. Do I have a second?
A second. Josie Muse.
Okay. All in favor? Eileen Thompson, aye.
Aye, Cookie Schaus.
Josie Muse, aye.
Aye, Marian Johnson.
Okay. All right, so then now we're in for discussion for the for the Planning Commission and how we're going to vote on sending this forward. Josie, do you mind making the motion?
Yes, but first the question is, what are we going to do about this standard operating procedure? How are we going to pull that forward? Are we looking at a side of this application? or does that need to be dealt with before?
Well, I think that we've kind of agreed that we're going to send it forward with the fact that we're going to look into taking this to our lawyer.
Okay.
Is that
when I say standard operating? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry,
so
go ahead.
I say standard operating procedure. I mean that goes into the town business, and if you know a new zoning administrator comes in, that is part of the procedures that the town goes through. So it does get carried forward, whether or not Michaela's here. Let me just look at my agenda here to see what I'm making a motion for.
Thank you.
Yep. Give me just a second.
Okay.
Okay. I make a motion to approve Ray Nelson's preliminary application for the subdivision and forward that to the town council.
Cookie Schaus, I second that.
Okay. All in favor? Aye, Colleen Thompson.
Aye, Josie Muse.
Aye, Cookie Schaus.
Aye, Marian Johnson.
Okay, so that will go on to the town council and it'll go, thank you, Ray, for all of your information.
And thank you help. All.
Yeah, thanks, Michaela. Okay, so we're gonna discuss the Deer Ranch subdivision. And there were some questions on that. Michaela, can you bring that up, or is Peg still there? His information?
Yeah, I can bring it up.
Thank you.
There are two maps, and which one did you want to look at first?
I guess what I really want to know, Michaela, is this application, is there anything left on that needs to be done that you know of that we need to know about?
The one last thing beyond what we got today, unless this is on here somewhere and I'm just not seeing it, the areas of slope and the 2-foot topographical information for the area. David is on the call tonight and he's the one that's going to address this. So maybe let's listen to him first.
Okay.
Thank you. So I got involved, in the last few weeks and spoke with Curtis. And I know that we don't yet have a preliminary plat. I've talked to Tom Torgerson, and we really had kind of three things that Curtis suggested we could talk to you about before Tom Torgerson prepares the preliminary plat. And the first one is the requirement of the ordinance that the proposed lot have a depth no more than 3 times the width. And so that's this. Tom has prepared this, what we're all seeing, to show if in the ordinance, it comes in a place where it's talking about frontage along the roadway, which in this case is to the right or the east of the lot. And if you look that way, then the width of the lot is somewhere between 721 feet and 770 feet. And the depth is 321 feet. But if you look at it the other way, then, it's a slightly funny shaped lot because of the existing road, but taking it at its approximate midpoint, it's 321 feet wide and 770 feet deep. So, in at least preliminary conversations between Tom and Curtis, they said either way you look at it, it seems to meet the ordinance requirements. So I'm looking to see if you have any different view of that.
I would agree. I think, you know, the reason we had asked for that is it wasn't delineated on our previous application. So now that it is, I think it's pretty clear that it falls within the standard.
Great. Then the next thing, the other map I sent to Peg shows the roadway that accesses. And is that the one? Is that the full one I sent you?
That's the only other.
No.
The only other one I have.
Are you acquainted with the road from 1600 South off the Lower Burr Trail?
Oh, that road. Oh, I know. I'm acquainted with that road. I think everybody knows that road, that you turn there at Filer's and Hell's Backbone and Acres House goes straight down. Yeah.
Right. Right. And then through the, it's not a gate, but it's an overhead, you know, log thing.
Yeah.
And then heading west for a ways and then north to the house.
Right.
So as I read the ordinance 152.015H5, it says a private right-of-way can be used to access up to four lots, provided such private right-of-way has direct access to a dedicated or publicly approved road or street. A private driveway is not required to meet the requirements of this section, except a private driveway is required to meet all public safety requirements as may be required by the fire marshal. And I got Pete Benson to go out there and look at this, and he's sent an email this morning that summarizes what he told me, which is that on the map we're looking at, there's an existing house and a garage. From there north along this road, there's already some road base, and it's largely wide enough for the 20-foot passageway that he talked about. But from the house south and then east to 1600 South, it's a dirt track, which in some places is not wide enough to make that 20 feet. And I've talked to Sean Owen about it, and he's fine with making it as wide, you know, wide enough so that there's room to pass and to put down road base or gravel in the road, similar to what's already from the house north, which he found would be good enough for fire trucks. So I'm hoping that that sounds good to everybody else and that you have the same interpretation.
Yeah. Does anyone have any comments?
I just like to comment on, don't know what part of the road, how to express this. It's before the driveway that would take you down into the Moocher house a long time ago. Somebody else owns it now. But that part of the road is almost impassable at times. I've ridden my horse down there many times, and it's been washed out a few times, and there are huge boulders at the top of that rise. I'm just wondering, I guess a fire truck could get down into that. I'm not certain. I guess Pete walked it. Is that, I'm a little confused because we don't see the whole road. I don't know, is there responsibility for just from the log entrance? Is that all Sean's responsible for?
That was my opinion, and I think what Pete thought. In his email today, he said that he thought that 1600 South was already dedicated. And he mentioned that there was that one spot, which in the event of further development would have to be addressed. But he didn't, my understanding was he didn't think that was necessary to make the road work for this one lot subdivision.
Okay. I guess I haven't gotten Pete's email, but I totally trust his judgment.
He did make a comment about who would be responsible for maintaining that road, whether it be Boulder or some of an association of the landowners. Does Sean, I kind of assume that, is Sean willing to take on the responsibility of the maintenance of that road?
There will be an agreement, you know, among the lot owners to assure that that road is maintained, with each of them having a say. I haven't got the full agreement ready, but that's going to be a private agreement, binding on both parts of the land. And it will be privately maintained.
Okay.
If I can comment for a minute. I think it looks like from just looking at the plat and the parcel information, it looks like 1600 South, there's a parcel for it. Looks like it's a dedicated road. And I don't know the status of that. So 1600 South all the way to the property line for the Deer Ranch, you know, where that arch is over the road. That looks like it's a public road or it's dedicated or something, because there's you know, parcel lines on the parcel map. So that's kind of the town's problem on 1600 South, but from the property line on down the Deer Ranch Road, that's going to be their problem.
Yeah.
That makes sense?
Yes, it does. So that has road base on it now, or is that the one that's on the road that is shown on the west side of this new parcel? Is that, does that have road base on it now?
Yes.
On the, I think that's the east side.
To the where, you know, the end of the road there, looks like it, there's some road base on the road, and it's actually nice gravel. But from 1600 South to the house is just a sand track that was, you know, kind of bladed once.
And I may have missed it, but when we were talking about the road improvement to the new lot, you've also mentioned that there needs to be the turnaround for a fire apparatus, and then you've sent us the road standards with an exception to that they can be a little smaller. I think you said 40 foot lengths on a hammerhead and so on. So we just need to know that turnaround for an apparatus needs to be there on the, well, I guess wherever they want to put it, but I would assume most likely on the corner of that lot, the new lot.
Right. There will be we're aware of that. And that will be shown on the plat.
Okay.
So one was road access. The other thing that Pete brought up was number two was a water supply. So there's information on the, what, did you see that, Josie?
Yes.
Yeah, so there's information on that too, if anybody has any questions about it.
And I think this is where the infrastructure question that we talked about earlier really comes into play. because yeah. there is possibility of further development. And if that is, you know, if more lots are divided off, then this lot needs to be ensured that it gets infrastructure as well, and not forgotten. Does that make sense? If they were to divide the remaining of what used to be the Lovato property, then of course they would need to bring infrastructure in, but this lot should also be receiving a hydrant. Is the way I read it. Is that what you meant, Pete?
Yes.
Gotcha.
That's clear.
Yeah.
Yes, similar to your discussion with Ray, and I've talked to Sean. He has no problem with that concept. However you work it out, I thought that my thought hearing you talk about it is that mentioning it on the plat is it'll be recorded. You'll always be able to find it, but you can talk to the town's attorney and let us know.
Yeah, when I talked with Curtis about this very thing, he suggested either a plat note or a development agreement. And the plat note seems like the best option, in my opinion, simply because it's going to go straight to the county recorder and it's going to be written right on the plat. But I am absolutely happy to forward this question to Mark McKiff and get a final decision so that moving forward on any of these, we are consistent and we're fair with everybody.
Yeah. Yeah.
And who is it that adds this language to the plot? To the plat map?
I would assume that it would be done when they have that final drawn up by the engineer. And then
so we'd get a chance to look at it before it's filed.
Yeah, it would go to the final final inspection, and that's for the town council. So right. I guess you could do a condition that you're going to forward it to town council on this, that this is going to be done. And so then when that is presented to the town council, that's written in there.
Okay.
And then we'll have a public hearing, and that's when we'll discuss those as far as them moving forward to the town council. Correct?
As far as I understand it, this is just a conversation, kind of a concept. So yes, mm-hmm. when you do the preliminary hearing and we do a public hearing like we just did with Ray's, then we would have a final drawing from, I believe it's Torgerson that's doing their engineering drawing. So that's where that would come in.
Okay.
Yes, and we're hoping to get this ready for the next Planning Commission meeting, if possible. So as you've done with Ray, you know, if we can somehow note that for the final plat and take care of it then, if it's not ready, in the next few weeks, that'd be great.
Okay.
And also, Dave, this is Peg. I need that list of the property owners within 300 feet so I can notify them of the public hearing. So that's part of your packet
too. I have that already.
Okay, great. If you can send that to me even separately, then I can get going on that.
Sure. I'll make a note.
Thanks.
All right. Does anyone have any other comments? So I'm excited to see this come back up in June and be able to get this through for Sean. I know you guys worked a lot on this and there's been a lot of holdups on it, but it's coming together.
We'll try to push it across. I have one other thing. Okay. So the town ordinance says that it's kind of broad and vague, but it says the submittal document should provide for stormwater drainage. And we talked to Tom, there's really not a change in the existing road. And so Tom was going to, his plan is to show a retention area on the lot, on this 5.5 acre lot that we're looking at. And I don't see any reason why that shouldn't be sufficient, but I wanted to get your thoughts about that.
Well, whatever works. Josie?
You know what? My internet just blipped a little bit. Could you repeat it?
Oh, go.
The question is whether it's sufficient for to show what we're doing for storm drainage to show a retention pond or a retention basin on this 5.5-acre lot.
Okay. So this comes back to, I don't have that in ordinance in front of me, but the I believe that infrastructure requirement is when you're going three or more, but I would definitely want to look at that ordinance. And I can just speak from, you know, having looked at other development sites, that a retention pond would be considered okay, but I couldn't definitively answer that. I think that would actually come back to you, Michela.
I'm looking at the ordinance right now, trying to find that number of
how many. Let's see, I show it at 152.041C8 and G4, it's mentioned.
Hold on. Yeah, I'm looking to see where the language that Josie's talking about is. I thought it was in the very beginning of that very ordinance. Preliminary. I think she's correct. It's either three or four, but I'm not finding the language right in front of me. So let's David, just would you mind emailing me that question and I can follow up on that for you? Would that be okay?
Sure.
Great.
Okay, so, and I have found something. Storm drainage streets shall provide a storm drainage system, including culverts for drainage water across the street or road, or when determined necessary by Boulder Town, and so on. Below that, for the purposes of this section, a street shall be defined as any vehicular way providing access to two or more lots. So we haven't seen this come up a lot yet. And the way I'm interpreting this is, the two or more. And if the street's a private ownership, a private right-of-way may be used to access up to four lots, provided such private right-of-way has direct access to a dedicated or publicly approved road or street.
Since the road is in existence for some time and there really isn't drainage across it, our thought was that there's no further storm drainage required for the road and that we ought to provide some a base storm drainage basin on the lot we're creating.
Seems like it's a good idea. Pete is, I'm not really sure what to say about that. Yeah. Michela, I guess you're going to have to look into this a little bit for us.
Yeah, that's my plan.
Okay. All right. So does that sound good then? To answer your question, is that okay with you, Mr. Bird?
Yes.
Okay.
I'll email Michela.
Okay.
And we'll try to figure that out shortly.
Okay. All right.
Those are the three things that I thought would be good before Tom prepares the plat.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you all.
Thank you. Okay.
Bye, Dave.
Bye-bye.
Okay, so let's go on to the next item that we have. We've been talking a little bit about our STR renewals. Since the RSTR cap information that we talked about went through the Planning Commission, or the town council, they made a decision on that. The next thing we need to talk about is we had put on the RSTRs that we would look back in a year as far as renewing their license. But we've never provided any paperwork or anything for that renewal. And let's see, Peg, did you have any information on that? Did you want to talk about a little bit about that? Because I know Alex is on too.
I don't really have any more information on it, and we don't have a procedure, so that's kind of the whole point of it.
Yeah, I mean, I can, you know, reading the ordinance, for those who don't know, it says here a conditional use permit issued under this section is valid for one calendar year and can only be granted or renewed as specified herein. And this is under 5 in the ordinance. So when you go to 5E2, it says for a renewal of the cup application, the owner shall provide a copy of the quarterly sales tax returns filed with the Utah State Tax Commission, together with proof of payment and a copy of the records of any website host, such as VRBO or Airbnb, showing the dates that any subject dwelling was occupied by RSTR guests during the previous 12-month period.
And that goes to Peg? So that information goes into Peg?
No. It would go in, we don't have the procedures, the problem. So typically most submittals go to Judy. I mean, it goes to the and then gets dispensed to me. But this is more of an administrative matter than any kind of a legislative matter. So there's no reason why I couldn't handle an application of that nature. And if it's just a matter of submitting tax records, you know, maybe I just make a report at a planning commission meeting and say they've submitted it and things look to be in place. And it's kind of, that's all you really need to do, right, Matt?
Yeah, that's what it seems like.
Yeah. Okay. So then Alex, and since you're on right now, so that's all you need to do then is get with Peg. And then Elizabeth and Troy will need to do the same thing, correct?
Yes, any RSTR.
Yeah, so it'll just be the two of them.
At this point, that's all we have, right, Michelle?
Oh, yeah. Thanks, guys. That was really helpful. I appreciate it. I'll get everything to you, Peg.
Okay.
All right. All right, good.
The other part of that, and maybe that's simply something Michelle and I can work out, and it doesn't require you guys to approve it or anything, but we don't have any notification procedure either. Like, it's kind of been left to the applicant's own devices of submitting that. Perhaps it would be a good idea for the town to actually send them, your year is over and we need your information. Maybe we need to do that. So there's just little procedural matters we need to iron out. And I'm not sure that you guys need to approve all that, but if you have good ideas on what you want to see, let us know.
Yeah. Well, and this is the first time it's come up. I mean, this is all brand new. It's just been a year. So at least we remembered it. And seems like we've taken care of these two, and next year it'll be easier probably.
And I agree, Peg, I think, and Michelle, I think the getting, you know, a notice out, you know, knowing the date that those RSTRs passed and having a notice go in to those people so they're sort of on call would be helpful if that feels part of the task of what you guys do.
I would agree, and Peg, you and I can maybe talk more about this a little bit offline, but I know that for the business licenses, it's easy because they're all due at one time, and we'll never have as many RSTRs as we will applicants for business licenses, but maybe there's a way to like prorate it for the first year so that we just have them all fall on the same date so we can just run, you know, some type of list like we do for sending out notices for the business license renewals. But yeah, Peg, you and I can talk more about this offline because maybe that's not even applicable because there's not as many. I don't know.
Okay. So the next thing that we have to talk about are the CUP revisions. Discuss when to discuss this. I got this from Lee. Chapter 8, it's an appendix of the revised version of Chapter 8, conditional use permits. I'm not sure if anybody had this. But we do need to bring this back up again as far as our site development plan shall be required. Does anybody else have this paper? I don't. We should try to find this again, maybe, Peg. It's an appendix of the revised version of Chapter 8, conditional use permits. I think this is something that we'd gotten from Lee that was talking about that, and maybe next month we could send this memo back out and everybody could take a look at it. Could we do that, Peg? Josie, do you remember looking at this at all?
I'm not sure what document you have.
I think you were gone that meeting and we didn't really talk a whole lot about it. I think Matt was there, but we could put it back on the agenda. And I'm sure Peg has this document. It's an appendix. I want to say that it came out in March or April as far as we needed to, so we could put that on the agenda and we could talk about it, because we didn't really want to talk about it tonight. We just wanted to bring it back up and get it back on so we could put it on next month's agenda. Does that make sense?
Can you clarify the objective of what we're looking at?
Yeah, it was one of those things where, let me see here. It was when they were going through the codification, I'm not sure where Peg is. When we went through the codification, there were some things that needed to be updated. And I have a memo here. Where is it? Let's see.
No. Colleen, I think Peg's back online. It looks like she got bumped off briefly. So let's give her a second and then we can maybe have her pull that up.
Yeah, that's so funny. There were some things when they did the codification that Curtis wanted to update, and it was in the conditional use permits. And Peg, are you there?
I'll see if I can find it too.
Yeah, so the heading is appendix. And there were just a couple of changes that needed to be made. So anyway, we didn't really want to talk about it. It had kind of dropped off and we wanted to get it back on next month's agenda. And then I'll get this paper. Because you guys can't see this. Anyway, I'll make sure that
Colleen,
I get this. Yeah.
To clarify the objective, what's happening here is the CUP ordinance was revised when it got codified, and that's what we're going to be looking at next month.
Right, right.
Okay, so yeah, we need copies of that so we can do all that.
Yeah.
That sounds good.
And I don't know how I ended up with one of these, but yeah, I know since I have it, Peg's got to be able to get it to us. So we just want to put it back on the agenda for next month.
Colleen, I'm back on. Sorry. My desktop blew out on me.
No, that's okay.
I missed everything you were saying, but after the rest of your discussion, was there anything I need to know about? Or
no. Well, Michela can fill you in on that. And Alex is going to get you her tax records. So you'll have those, and then we'll start we'll get a memo out to people ahead of time so that they know that they just have to turn those records in to either you or Judy. And okay. Alex said she'd get those to you.
Okay.
And then you, and then we put on the agenda two CUP revisions. And so next month, I have this memo that I got from Lee. It's an appendix, revised version of Chapter 8 conditional use permits.
Yes.
Since we codified the everything, there were some things in the conditional use permits that we needed to update. And Lee had sent us this memo. And so we want to make sure everybody gets one for next month.
Okay, I'll find that and resend that to you guys. I remember where that was.
Yeah, I think it was last month that I got it.
Yeah, it was maybe 2 months, but I know where it is. I can resend it.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Okay.
It's part of another then, item. So.
Yes, well, yeah, I think it was last month because yeah, so anyway. So then we can go on to discuss upcoming business for June. And so we'll be listening. We'll have Sean back. We'll have Lee Nellis at the beginning. We'll have Sean. And those are the only two things that I know right now. Is that okay. Correct?
So Lee is going to be hopefully he's hoping to finalize your discussion on guest ranch and campground and yes. Then open into a conversation about considering ways to involve the community for this larger discussion about capacity and housing and so on and so forth.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And then hopefully we'll have the Deer Ranch subdivision.
Yep.
And I think that's it. Then we have final public comments.
Okay, I think Dan and Jennifer want to make a comment.
Okay.
But they have to unmute themselves.
Hi.
First. Okay.
I thought I just did. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yes.
Hi. Okay, thanks everybody. Thanks for all your hard work. I just wanted to really encourage and say thank you, obviously, to the Planning Commission, all of you, but to encourage you to do the make the public thing you were talking about earlier in terms of the zoning and clustering. And I know that it's going to be a difficult discussion, but I'm really thankful that you're entertaining that idea. And I want you to know that at least I'm very much behind you and really support you to do that. And I hope that it doesn't get delayed any more than it needs to, especially as the market and everything changes. So just super supportive of that. And thank you very much for trying to make an effort to do that. There's lots there to discuss for the public. Thank you.
Yeah, so make sure you come on next month when we're on with Lee so you can pipe in too. We appreciate your willingness to give us information and to be interested, involved.
Okay, thank you.
Looks like Pete and Tina. Or Corla.
Yes, I again would like to say thank you to you guys as well as the town council. Everybody, you guys are just working really hard and it's a thankless job, and there's many of us that appreciate your time and effort, and I just want you guys to all know that. What's happening in California, which is certainly different than Utah, but I think it's happening all around the country, is the housing crisis. And the state is pushing things. I heard you guys mention this at the beginning, or Lee said it. The state's pushing things on you guys. And I just appreciate you trying to be proactive and, you know, getting ahead of this. There's going to be things you can't do anything about because state regulations are going to supersede. But it's so important to protect Boulder and the quality of life there and just the charm and character of this unique community. And thank you guys again all for what you're doing in your time.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for your comments. Peter, Tina?
I just wanted to say that knowing that this is a total volunteer operation, I'm happy to help in any way, especially in regards to the cluster development option, which would allow a more diverse community. And I think it's really important that we look at the fact that we don't want to just be homogenized in some way, and that it's better to have many different generations, different economic options for whoever really wants to live here. So, and I believe the cluster development is part of that. So anyway, I'd like to be part of that if and would work on that if you needed me. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Okay, do we have any more comments?
I don't see any more.
Okay, so I'll make a motion that we end the meeting.
I'll second that motion.
All in favor? Aye. Colleen Thompson?
Josie Muse, aye.
Cookie Shouse, aye.
Matt Cochran, aye.
Marian Johnson, aye.
Thank you, Marian, for being on. I've noticed you haven't been around. I hope everything's okay, and thank you for your input.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Okay, I guess that's it.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, Josie?
Yeah.
Do you have a phone number?
7777.
Oh, God, that's easy. Thank you.
You betcha.
I can remember that. Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
All right, thank you all. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Hey, Michela, since I'm not the hosting anymore, can you turn off the recorder?
Yes. Okay.